This is Stuart.
Hey Stuart, this is Sam over at the Bank of Cardiff. Looks like I just missed your phone call.
Hi Sam, how are you?
Hey, I'm not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Oh, good, good. You know, I saw that you had, you know, reached out about the working capital programs. Just wanted to see if you had a couple minutes to talk about it.
Yes, yeah, this is a good time.
Oh, okay, perfect, perfect. Okay, give me 1 second. I'm pulling up your file right now. Is the name of the business that you're with, is it Tug K Consulting?
Yes.
Okay, okay, perfect. And then we have the billing address as 1726 Country Club Place in Marshalltown?
Yes.
All right, got it. Now, is it an LLC?
Yes.
All
registered
right.
In Iowa.
Okay, how long have you been in business over there?
It's been registered as a business for... last June 1st, so 13 months.
Okay. Were you in business before it was registered as an LLC?
I was working for someone, but I actually started this business, not much longer, you know, a little more than 3 months before.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So not a long time.
I got it. All right. And you are the 100% owner?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Perfect. So that's just some basic info. Give me a little starting ground. You know, as far as the working capital goes, we do have a lot of different programs. It kind of depends on what your specific need is. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you're looking for, and I can point you in the right direction here and see what we're working with.
Okay. Well, first of all, you know, I just need some working capital. I mean, we're tapped out, and that is due in part to some unpaid invoices from a vendor. But anyway, the opportunity. We've been working with the university to develop a new product within the technology area that we work in, and for the customer base that we serve. And it's a very exciting new thing I can go into detail if you'd like, but I'm going to need to, it's really, there'll be some very light manufacturing, but, primarily assembly, testing, and shipping.
Okay.
And so I have a building that I've negotiated a contract purchase on, and so it's a very low cost building, and I think we're going to have almost some immediate equity on it when we buy it. But I need a down payment for that.
Okay.
And I've already arranged to have experts do our layout completely. Not just our layout, but our ordering practices and inventory and shipping practices and so forth. And fortunately, that's through a university nearby, Iowa State University, my alma mater. And
okay.
So I actually, because of different things, I can participate in a program where I get a team of graduate students in manufacturing and industrial engineering, and they work on it for, it's long, and then they follow along, and the total fee is $5,000.
Not bad.
But it's cheap. It's incredibly cheap. And I know assembly, I know manufacturing, but I don't know like these people. And so then it's not going to be an expensive setup. We're not going to need the expensive machine tools or. We'll need a saw that cuts 80/20 aluminum and steel mix, and we're going to need racks and storage and probably something like a pallet jack.
Okay.
So there's going to need to be I would guess $15,000-$20,000 for that. The facility is an open, there's an office building on the front of it that we wouldn't use in the beginning, but the back of it, it used to be a trucking shipping company. So it's a very large open facility with shipping docks and so forth already built in, so we can use the facility as it is.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah, now when we grow a little bit more, you know, the idea is to remodel the offices and then we would move into the office. The office would move into the office building. In the short term, the offices would be right out in the, you know, in the assembly area. But there, so there'd be 15,000-20,000 in fixtures and tools, and there'd probably be $15,000 that I'd have to spend on the building, primarily for sanitary restrooms and things like that.
Oh, okay.
They have restrooms, but they, you know, the building's a bit old and hasn't been occupied for quite some time. So, you know, those have to be redone.
Sure. Okay. All right. So is that pretty much the extent of the, you know, the current needs?
Oh, I should add, for the product, the structure that holds the screens is initially a truss style structure with uprights, and I have a conceptual design that I need to have completed using a process that I helped develop years ago, and there's going to be some expense to that to complete my redesign. So we'll move away from 80/20 steel to something probably carbon fiber, and because the system we're working on is portable, and the design I have for the structure, you know, will take hours off the setup time. And it'll make it cooler. well, which is important. This is going to be something that, you know, that once people see it, you know, from other companies or from other departments, whatever, they'll want one as well. so that's probably, it's going to be between $10,000 and $15,000 to get the engineering done. On my design, to specify exactly the material, and then of course to verify that all the things fit together the way they should, and that the structural strength will be there.
Sure. Okay. What exactly is the product? I'm kind of interested in that.
Do you know anything? Are you familiar with virtual reality?
Only basic level.
Well, it's actually, you know, it's true of all of our businesses. Maybe not yours. Banking is still a little confusing, but you know, a lot of things, you know, sound more difficult and more, you know, more like a black art than they do, and that's because practitioners do that to make it.
Absolutely. Banking is much smarter.
So virtual reality is a three-dimensional image that's, and if you've been to Disney World and sat, or I guess you're in California, so it'd be
sure.
Disneyland.
We'll go Disneyland, yes.
Yeah, and so if you've ever sat in one of their I call them theaters, but one of their shows where you know the images come right out and wrap around your head.
Uh huh.
And you call that 3D, right?
Yeah.
That's essentially virtual reality. And then if I don't know if Disneyland has it, but some of their shows then not only are the images coming out and surrounding you, but then they have effects that you feel, and that's called augmentation. So you now know what virtual reality and augmented reality are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today, one of the things that's causing my business to grow so fast is that it's industry. I don't focus on consumers. My focus is industry. So my clients are people like General Electric and Pfizer and universities and,
oh,
and
okay.
things, Ford, GM. But in industry, virtual reality has been used for, 20-plus years. But as with any technology, the early users are called early adopters. And it gets used and tested and poked around. And when they verify that, this is going to make us money using this stuff, they use it to begin to spread. And then you need, then the next thing that's necessary is the price needs to start to come down. And so now you have systems like Oculus Rift. And I'm sure you've heard of Oculus, right, from Facebook?
Yeah. Yeah,
and you've seen them. So that's a head mounted display, and there are, there are a number of different ways to capture this virtual image. So with the Oculus, you put that on, and you're inside. Where Disney is a fleeting kind of it jumps out and it surrounds you. You feel the effect and goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're in a virtual reality system, like using an Oculus Rift, you're there as long as you want to be.
Yes.
Walking around inside of a building or, looking up and down inside an engine or sitting in a car and reaching for, controls and steering wheels and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the new really low-cost stuff. And industry is using and will use those things, especially as they get better, but they'll use them now. What is preferred is a system that is bigger, that they can stand together in groups and all see the same images at the same time.
Sure.
And so the original device that was created, the original system created, is called a CAVE, and which stands for Computer Automated Virtual Environment. And anyway, the CAVE essentially, even though that's a very broad description, it essentially is attached to a system that looks like a small room. It has, generally, a CAVE has three walls that are 10 foot by 10 foot by 10 foot, 8 foot tall, and it has a floor.
Mm-hmm.
And your projection comes from the back, and there devices, and so on, and you step in and you put a pair of what would look like sunglasses on, and then you have somebody navigate, experience the virtual image.
Okay. Well, that's kind of cool. So there are actual physical walls. It's almost like a room that you're standing in.
It's exactly like a room that you're standing in. The walls are screen material, so think of your college classes when they pull down the screen, and it's by, the company, if you happen to pay attention, most of those are like from Daylight, DALITE, and there are other manufacturers, but the walls are made of screens,
sure.
Screen material. And they then are attached to the structure that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so the structure has to be strong. The structure, these things can't move. These screens are attached in a way that they can't move. You don't even want them to ripple.
Uh-huh.
And so the structure behind is pretty stout. The structure also holds all the projectors. What is typical is that these things are built. Even if a company selling them has a certain set of models, they're built, tested, and then built again on site. And a year and a half ago, you couldn't get a CAVE for less than $750,000.
Yeah.
And so not many people have them. There's also another way to do this, which is a wall, just one flat wall. Think of a classroom, and you've got a 20-foot wall, and
mm-hmm.
you stand up in front of the wall, and you get the same sense. Anyway, our device is called CAVE in a Box. And by the way, the person who invented this, the person I'm working with, is the head of a university visualization center. And by the way, if you're interested, USC has a huge graduate program with different visualization systems.
Oh, sure. I'm sure they do.
So anyway, the inventor of the CAVE, the original inventor, the professor that that has her name attached to the invention of the cave, invented this cave in a box. And she's the head of this facility at the University of Arkansas as a client of mine. And together, we've been working on the commercialization of the cave in a box. And so the cave in a box, the big difference, now, it's got three walls and a floor.
Mm-hmm.
The walls are only 9 feet, and they're only 7 feet tall.
Okay.
And again, these size differences are part of what makes her design work. But the real key is she has figured out a way to use a lower cost projector for them,
mm-hmm.
and they're called short throw projectors. And short throw projectors can be placed very close to the screen, 18 inches away, to 12 inches in her case. Okay. Now, generally with a cave, your projectors have to be 5 to 7 feet away, and so you can think about how big the structure is.
Yeah, that just adds to the size that it needs to be.
Yeah, and so when you walk into a room over at USC or whatever that has a cave, generally they'll have two black curtains, one on either side. They're about 10 feet long, and that's where all the stuff is hidden. And you go through the curtain, and you go back in there, and it's like you're behind it. It's like you're in the projection room of a big movie theater.
Uh-huh.
All sorts of gear and so on. Anyway, short throw projectors running with one computer instead of a cluster. And so the cost drops, through the floor. But more importantly, you have much less structure. So the structure she's building right now, the truss structure, which is a real standard cave structure, she's building is 2 feet deep, not 7 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And the short throw projectors fit then on these things. But the cave in a box concept, so and the price on the street is going to be $75,000.
Oh wow, that's far less than what it was before, huh?
Well, and that's a price. So again, we're talking initially the buyers are probably going to be the larger companies still, although at that price, we might even bleed into the consumer market.
Yeah, I would believe
it. People want to do gaming. You know, and there's a lot of gaming, obviously a lot of content for gaming. You're going to see Google and Disney are making huge investments. You're going to see content coming out in virtual form, for everything. Think about Disney and you go into one of their theaters where you're flying in a plane through, the Grand Canyon and what have you. I mean, all that stuff is going to become, is going to become available for content. And you can, and again, the whole idea is a lot of people will use these head-mounted displays, but, just like televisions were when flat panels first came out, the aficionados, they'll drop $50,000 on a television.
Yeah.
And so, while other neighbors are using Oculus Rift, the guy in the street that's got the gadgets, he puts a cave in his basement or anywhere. But but for industry, this thing now will fit in like an unused office. All right, you no longer have to tear walls out and create a new room. This thing will just fit anywhere.
Yeah,
but
there's a huge benefit to that.
It's huge. It's huge. So not only is the price going to shake people up, the fact that you can put it anywhere is a paradigm shift. And then again, this thing is meant to be assembled or disassembled in hours. Well, again, with the truss structure, that's where all the time is going to be spent. With the truss structure, it may take 4 hours to take that apart. The way a truss structure works, what a cell phone tower looks like with the triangles.
Sure.
That's a truss structure. And so what you use is these square channels, these square pieces of steel. You cut them, and you form them into trusses, and you connect them with these connectors, brackets, that you tighten with ratchets. And so these things all have to be put together. And my design it'll be much more like a, think of it as a tent.
Mm-hmm.
Dome tent. You'll pull the pieces apart. It'll be an upright. There won't be any any structure sitting out there, you'll see one pole going up, one shaft. And I'm not sure what size it'll end up being. It depends on the engineering. You know, will it be, 2 inches square? Will I be able to get the strength I need with 2 inches? Or will it be 4 inches? I'm not sure. But the key is that it'll have a snap fit of some type. And then taking it apart will be like taking it out of tent. And because, again, the reason we're building this, a lot of it is because it's portable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
You have companies that want... They think, yeah, I'd like to cave, but, we've got 10 facilities, 10 buildings, in our campus or around the city, if you think about Detroit, that could all potentially use this at different times. And so, this thing will be shipped in hard cases with the foam and so forth, and that's what they'll pack it up in.
Oh,
and,
wow.
They'll either drive it over to the place or, people will ship it to different divisions. They'll use it for a month. See, what happens, in industry, these are often used for design, heavy, during the heavy design periods. And so, it might be, used extensively for 3 months and then not used so much.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of people are thinking, well, hey, when we're not using it, we can turn it to Division Y or Division X. And so it's a big deal. And, the fact that they get to hang, Carolina's name on it. I've already trademarked my cave in a box. And again, my company is about putting systems together. And that's in a year we've earned about $750,000 in sales.
Okay.
This will augment our business, and then we won't purely be using other people's products. We'll also have a product that we can assemble and sell, and so it adds another dimension to my business. But then again, we're going to continue to design and engineer systems that may or may not use the cave in the box.
Sure.
We're going to be doing a lot of work with HMDs, which, a lot of professional outfits that build systems for virtual and augmented reality won't touch the HMD stuff. There's no way they'll tell the customers to buy it themselves and, deal with it. Because it's again, a lot of these people have been in business for a while. They look at that stuff as either for home use, or if it's used in industry, they're like, they're too cheap. Well, that's not the truth at all. Industry wants to use them so they can propagate the technology. It's similar to what I'm talking about with the cave in the box. They want to be using virtual reality technology where it's needed.
Oh, yeah.
GM is talking about, about putting a couple hundred of these HMD systems out. I'm working with Global Factory Engineering. And so they're thinking 200 seed units will spread around the world, and then they'll sit back and see how it goes.
Yeah.
And then they'll buy more. Because this is like color. It's like when they got color monitors instead of amber.
Oh, I see.
And believe it or not, they looked at color and they said, shit, I can see my stuff a lot better. This is great. But it's expensive.
Uh-huh.
And so there was a transition. And the same was true from 2D CAD to 3D CAD. They looked at it and said, shit, I can see my model, I can see my product in three dimensions. Now I can see the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it took a long time for people to really turn on the money faucets and convert to 3D, 3D modeling in industry. We're at a point now where they're turning the faucets on for virtual reality, and all we're doing, the hard part, by the way, was the 3D modeling. That was a big transition. You got to change the whole process. All I'm doing, it's easy. I'm changing the friggin' monitor.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes to implement. You see, by the way, I've been working on process improvements. That's all I do. I've been doing it for 27 years. Now, for a lot of those years, it was focused on engineering. and the simulations that I, and it's always been simulations, visual simulations.
Yeah.
But for a lot of years, I was focused on high-end engineering, moving engineering up front in the design process, so that instead of building, you know, designing something and sending it out to be prototyped and have it break, you know, you just, you do all that, you know, while you're designing the product, and that's the process, by the way, that will be used for my new structure. But that took a long time to get that all in place.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're changing, that's a, again, it's a huge shift. That was a huge shift in inside organizations. You know, you, and I won't go into all that, but this stuff I'm doing now, and by the way, I shifted, you know, purposely. I've been involved in virtual reality and simulation since 1990.
Oh, wow. You've seen it come a long way, though.
Well, the first system I ever put on, it was a system that I was at an Autodesk conference. Have you ever heard of AutoCAD?
AutoCAD? No.
Yeah.
I don't believe so.
And it's like the dominant system in 3D. But it was 2D at the time, and that's the first time I saw the system. It was a home built, essentially, HMD, made out of two Sony Watchmen, excuse me. And you're probably too young to know what a Watchmen is.
Yeah, I know the Walkman. Not sure about the Watchmen.
The Watchmen was a little television, handheld. It was about the size of a walkie-talkie. Half of it was all the guts and the speaker, and the top little half was a little dinky screen.
Oh, okay.
First they came out black and white, and they were $99, and then they came out with color. And so they took two of these color ones, they turned them upside down, and they created a kind of a strapping system that allows you to put this thing on, and the two color screens are right in front of your eyes. Mm-hmm. And then they were doing what we do in virtual reality through, but it was not a cord hooked to a computer. It was a 3-inch wire harness. This guy got out of a van, and the van had three super mini computers in it. And he walked out, and then I got to use it. But the reason Autodesk did that at the time is they had purchased something called RenderMan, the RenderMan graphics standard. And so the first virtual reality stuff I ever sold was a software product they created using the RenderMan standard, which was photorealistic, shaded imagery that nobody had ever seen before. Now, they didn't make a lot of money on the product that they created, so they sold RenderMan, the RenderMan graphics standard, to Pixar.
You know, yeah, that's what I thought I'd remember talking to somebody in here with RenderMan.
Yeah, so the images you see in a Pixar movie?
Yeah.
That's RenderMan.
Sure,
so,
okay.
It's built on top of the RenderMan graphics. And so that's what their first products look like. You know, I could have a client build a building using, it was called Animator, and Autodesk Animator. But it was RenderMan, so you could build a building that was completely photorealistic. It was mind-blowing. But it just didn't catch on enough for Autodesk, so they sold it to Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, Pixar was a very young company. I don't think Jobs had gotten involved yet. So anyway, long story short, if you're familiar with the technology curve, we're at a point where companies are buying at a rapid rate.
Yeah.
And nobody has anything like this. There's nothing in existence. You cannot buy a cave for $75,000.
Sure.
Even if it was one that they built and then came out on their site and then built in your site,
uh-huh,
you couldn't get it. And then on top of that, this one's portable, and it's smaller in total size. And again, that's a huge drawback.
Absolutely.
And even if you're an engineering manager, you're convinced that you need virtual reality, it needs to be a cave. And you take your vice president to see one of these things, and he says, well, fuck. You know, that thing's 40 feet by 40 feet.
Yeah, where are we going to put it?
Well, we'll have to make the room. He goes, no. You know, the thing's $750,000, and then you're going to ask me to spend $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 to set up a room.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the room has to have new air conditioning, you know, because they generate so much heat. We're not going to need that. And so it's a big deal. And
it's a pretty exciting idea.
It's huge. She actually came up with the idea in 2000, and she's been playing with it for some time. And basically, in this position at the university she's at now, she started out at my alma mater, Iowa State, which is kind of the center of the universe for virtual reality technology. It was not invented at Iowa State. It was invented by a professor at Harvard, but shortly thereafter, and by the way, invented is kind of a stretch. He conceptualized.
Yeah, sure.
But if you want to talk about when it was invented or first discussed, you go back to Plato. And,
oh wow!
Sure. And then I don't know if you've ever read. Did you study Descartes philosophy in college?
Oh yeah.
Remember Descartes' first. Have you ever read Descartes' first meditation? The candle. I think, therefore I am.
Oh, I think that. Yeah, classic Descartes. Yes.
Which he didn't say. It's a statement drawn from two or three sentences that he wrote. But anyway, Bishop Berkeley, Plato first conceptualized this whole idea: do we exist, or are we something? Is there a thought process, or that creates us? Are we real, or are we something else?
Sure.
Are we something God visualizes? Bishop Berkeley and Descartes hit it really hard, and then again, this whole idea of do you exist or do you not exist? And I happen to have a philosophy professor in college. Who was so incredibly fixated on existence, but that's all we studied up until the night, the day after he shot himself.
Oh, wow.
And then we had the dean of the department come in. Yeah, he committed suicide.
Wow.
And so then we all looked at each other and went, well, shit. No wonder we've had no tests. All we do, he gives us huge reading assignments. Plato, Berkeley, and Descartes, and so he was just he basically through us, he was trying to get an idea of existence, and he was focused on the existence of God. So you can use these arguments, these postulates that they throw out, and you can talk about the existence of anything, but the long story short is they essentially came up. They were the first to really discuss and define this whole idea of a virtual reality. But anyway, a guy named Evans, at Harvard, came up with this idea in a concept form, and then Iowa State then began to develop all the things, the software and hardware, that would allow you to actually see it. And that's where she was. And then she went to the University of Illinois Chicago, which is where she actually invented the cave, and they've invented the cave too since she left. The cave too is a huge circular environment, but it's a big deal. She's got a big name. I've got the rights to commercialize it.
Awesome. It's an exciting idea. I mean, I love the way you present it too. I'm all remembering Descartes, thinking about mind body dualism, and
and what you quickly drift into, if you're into that, and since you studied that, I'll say this, and you won't think I'm crazy, but I'm sure when you watch The Matrix, you're thinking, that's a different way of looking at what he was thinking about.
Sure,
you know,
absolutely.
What Berkeley and Descartes were thinking about. And so, virtual reality is really the manifestation of those concepts. And engineers, she's a computer scientist. She's computer science all the way through to her PhD. But you've got a lot of, a fair number of mechanical engineers and so forth. It's mostly computer scientists, though. And you know, they figured out a way to use projection to hit your eyes with stereo. You know, so when you're using a virtual reality system, all they're doing is pelting your eyeballs with in stereo. So your left eye and your right eye are getting different images, different pieces of stuff at a highly rapid rate. And that opens your brain up. And so your brain receives 20% more information than normal. And so it's just, you know, thrusting stuff to your brain. But it causes your brain to see this image all around you. So that, and of course that whole thing took a long time to figure out how to do. But anyway, so all the perfection. So she's really taking existing technology that she developed and other people have tried to perfect, and she's taken it to a whole different level. And she's figured out how to put these projectors right up next to the screen and use low cost projectors instead of, you know, $200,000 projectors or $2,500.
Yeah.
And then somehow, and I haven't had enough time to talk to her about this, somehow she's doing it with one computer. Generally it's a cluster. Are you familiar with clusters?
Well, I mean, to me, that just means the concept of multiple computers all working together. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a rack. You know, you've walked into companies, you see a rack of 10 computers.
Yeah.
That's a cluster. That's a cluster. And so generally, with four projectors, you would have effectively 8 GPUs or 8 graphics cards. And those, you'd either have 8 PCs or you'd have 4 PCs with 2 GPUs on each. And then you'd have a master. So at a minimum, you would generally drive a 4-projector system with 5 computers.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing it with 1.
Wow.
And so again, instead of having a $100,000 cluster, you've got a $2,500 PC.
Sure, yeah, so the same concept.
It cheapens things, but at the same time, remember, her whole thing is, how do I make this simple enough where we can ship it out in a box? Again, that's where the hard cases come. And then something that I'm going to have her add that I need to, is with, you know, box, there'll be probably 3 boxes. I have to figure out all the packaging, but box 1, you'll open it up, and right in the center of that box will be an iPad. And by the way, iPads are used often as control systems for these caves.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
They're set up for each individual client, so that, you know, any researcher or any engineer can walk up and say, "I want to use that software," and "I want to use this model,"
mm-hmm.
and then all they've got to do is put the glasses on. But before that happens, I wanted the first button pushed to be the assembly instructions, and then the disassembly instructions will be on the iPad as well. And of course, you know, that allows to include some video, you know, some different formats, you know, versus a manual. And again, we're not talking about anything earth shaking, you know, and putting something like on that on an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
But it will enhance the ease of use and the concept. They'll ship out. And you know, you're going to need an IT or an AV type person. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, any Joe could set this thing up. You're going to need somebody who understands computers.
Yeah.
But we're working to a point where we'll get to the point where anyone could set it up.
Yeah. The we'll eventual goal quick. There. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no,
I believe it. I mean, yeah, especially the more. Year. Oh, wow. That's quite an accelerated pace then. Nice.
Well, see, if she has funding, the more funding she has, the faster she can develop.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, she has a graduate program, right? She has 40 people working for her. And, you know, 30 of them are students. The others are full-time, brilliant people. And the other students are working on their PhDs. And so if she... when she commercializes something, and she's working on two things right now, and the other one I'll probably assemble as well and sell. But that, you know, their royalties will flow back to her department, and she'll be able to add more people on this project. And she'll just be, she'll have people writing new software, you know, doing all kinds of things. You know, I've got a short list of things I'd like done. You know, I'd like two additional projectors tested out so that for higher resolutions, because people are going to ask for that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Maybe it ends up being $150,000, but, you know, we're going to have there are buyers at that level, easy. But see, being under 100K, if you're talking to GM or Pfizer or GE or any of these companies of that size and it's under 100K, generally then the signature can occur at the VP level. It doesn't have to go any higher.
Yeah.
And that makes a world of difference to these guys. Because you convince a VP at a big company, he goes, yeah, I love it. Man, you're talking 500,000. You know, he's thinking shit. You know, I'm going to have to work for 3 months. You know, beg, borrow, and steal, plead, you know, just to get that approved.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a lot of work. And so they say no. And, sorry about all that.
Oh, no, I'm actually fascinated by it. It's really a great concept. Do you feel that the demand is there if you're able to get it out, you know, at the commercial level? Is it already there, or are you just anticipating that it will be?
No, it's there today.
That's what I would think. Yeah.
I've talked to 1, 2, 3, 4 clients, major corporations,
mm-hmm.
GE, Pfizer, Orbital ATK, and Gulfstream. And GE is really excited about it. And Orbital is really excited about it. And then Pfizer, I can't say they're not excited. They are. But it might be a year before Pfizer would buy. GE would buy them. We'll buy them coming out of the chute.
Sure. So now do you currently have does a cave in a box exist right now? Is there a prototype that's out there?
Yeah, it's down in her facility. It's real crude. Well, I saw it before. We had a meeting with the Army down there, and that's one of the things they were looking at.
Sure, I can believe that.
And it was made at that point. The structure was made of PVC pipe,
mm-hmm.
and they had, you know, lightweight material hanging from that. When she gets back from her vacation, which is after the 4th of July, she has all the 80/20 and all that, and she'll, you know, her and her students this summer, you know, it'll take a day, probably maybe 2 days. For them to create the initial structure.
Mm-hmm.
But she's got all the parts. She's purchased everything. She's got all the material sitting right there, all the tools. So as soon as that's done, they've got the screens. They've tested screen material. They specified which one. They've got the projectors. They've got the computers. Once the structure goes up, then a full prototype will exist.
Yeah.
And at that point, then I can snatch it and take the drawings and not only prepare, then I'll hand it off to this team that'll start August 20th. I'll hand it to them, and then they'll build my, you know, they'll create everything necessary, you know, from what needs to, where the truck needs to back up to deliver and where the truck needs to back up to, you know, to ship it.
Sure.
And then at the same time, if I have money, as soon as I have that 3D model, then I will go to an engineering consulting firm it's actually a colleague of mine from years ago, and then I'll work on my design, and so, you know, the idea is that, you know, ideally, you know, 3, 4, 5 months after, 5 months, let's say,
mm-hmm.
after I begin to ship the system with a truss structure, at 5 months, you know, I'll be able to replace that structure with you know, with the new design. It won't
and
take
that,
long.
That would be the tent design with the carbon fiber.
Well, yeah, and I say carbon fiber. We've talked. You know, I've been talking to this. You know, my old colleague. And that's something. It could be. We can build a study that allows us to look at different materials as it iterates, as the models run. So it may be carbon fiber. You know, I was talking metals initially, like titanium, and he was the one. He does a lot of work in aerospace. That's a big part of why he's the right person to do this. And then two, he understands the process that we use
uh-huh.
that I'm talking about. And the process, by the way, is remember I told you I spent most of my career moving engineering up front. And to do that, what we did, the first software company I was with, we built this really innovative engineering analysis software that had a completely different core technology. And what it allowed you to do was take a 3D model and link it with our analysis tool and set parameters for changes. Like you allow this thickness to go from a quarter inch or an eighth inch up to a quarter, and you look at, or let's say it's a 16th to a quarter, and you let it look at increments of 16th, right? Because
mm-hmm.
finding something that isn't a 16th wouldn't work because people don't sell that material, for instance. And you allow a round to change the radius this much, these thicknesses, and you build these parameters in, and materials are one. You know, and you have it look at different materials, yeah, and you set these conditions. It has to be stresses have to be below this level and so on. And then once you build this model, which takes a little bit of time, once you build the model, you let it run, and you know you get these several different potential outcomes. You know, you look at different. You know, it'll give you maybe two or three acceptable materials. And the shape will ultimately end up, you know, being the same. And so that's the process that we'll use. Is I'll have a very smart model built, not only at the start of my conceptual design, but it'll have all the engineering hooked to it. And so, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, having a design, you know, modeled up, and then, you know, and then an analysis run, and then a test done physically, have it manufactured. This will all be done in a couple of weeks, and then I can. Then I'll have to send out this thing. This thing will have to be manufactured by someone. There's no way that I'm going to set up a manufacturing facility that has the tooling and so forth to work with materials like that.
Sure.
So I'll have to find. The contract manufacturers are everywhere. I mean, you can go to any city where there's a lot of aerospace work done, Huntsville, Seattle, wherever. And then there are going to be a ton of shops around mm-hmm. to do this work. So,
okay.
So that's where I'm at.
Okay, and I appreciate the great explanation of all of it because, I mean, not only does it help me do my job, but it's fascinating. Now I have a couple questions just to kind of fit in, you know, where we're going to go from here. I definitely have an idea of what you're using it for. Now, on a specific timeline, how soon do you need the funds in place?
Ideally it'd be right away.
Okay, perfect. And that actually works out pretty well. Now, were you looking for, so based on kind of, you know, everything that you've told me, we're probably looking at the ballpark of around maybe 45 to 50,000 on this initial startup cost. That's including, the down payment for the building, all of the materials, the aluminum, the steel, the aluminum cutting saw, the racks, the storage, the pallet jack, and then also that includes the engineering costs for your redesigned model.
It's actually closer to 75.
75, okay, perfect.
The down payment on the building is 32.
Oh, 32, I had it as 15. I'm sorry about that, okay.
Yeah, it's a $125,000 building. It's a steal. But it's been sitting a long time, nobody wants to buy it. and but it just happens to fit perfectly for what we want to do.
Okay.
So it's $125K. It's a 10-year contract at 6%. And so that's the building. So yeah, it's $75K.
Okay, so next question is, we're $75K is pretty much what we're looking at what we need. What would be the minimum amount that would at least get you able or have you able to, you know, get started on everything? If the full $75K isn't available, which first of all I think that it probably will be, but I just want to make sure that we're kind of, you know, going
50.
At this the best way possible. 50. Okay.
50 would allow me to buy the building, and you know, I can go cheap on any fixtures that, you know, allow me to pay the $5K. You know, I can delay, you know, the design of the structure and so forth.
Okay.
The redesign, and so yeah, 50.
Okay. Now, just to give you an idea of kind of the way this works, is the working capital programs, we're usually able to do about 10-15% of the top line revenue. So if you're at about that, I think you said it was about $750,000 for last year. You know, you'd be looking at 75 would be available to you. Now, you know, that's based just on the sales. There are a few other factors that come into play that can make that amount vary. So how would you rate, let's say, your personal credit? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it somewhere in the middle? What's it look like?
It's not good right now. It's considered fair. I've been funding the company out of cash flow, and I had some problems with a supplier over the last few months. My credit
sure, the invoices, yeah, okay.
Yeah, not paying, and so the credit card balances are maxed.
Okay.
And then on top of that, you know, I had two electronic snafus paying my mortgage payment online, and the bank won't change that. So it's fair, and those
okay.
are the reasons.
And no problem, you know, we're still going to have something that will be able to get you qualified for. It just might affect either the amount that we're able to do or the term length that we're able to do. But what we'll do is get you approved for the largest amount possible and the longest term possible, and kind of work backwards from there, where you can choose
yeah.
how much you need, how long, which term makes sense. Now, another question is, have you done any working capital loans before?
I have a loan. Based on cash flow.
Sure.
What are they called? Merchant.
A merchant cash advance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm trying to. I'm actually in negotiations to change. I'm sure you know how those work. They
yeah.
pull a big chunk out, you know, daily and so right now I have somebody negotiating with them to turn it into a monthly payment and to reduce the to slice a bunch of the interest off.
Okay. Okay. And that's always a good option. And just
that's
for
29,
your
that's 29K.
Is that the current balance on it, 29K?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. How much did you borrow in total on it?
Well, it was originally, you know, a $30,000 loan. But
and then
the way
the interest, the payback is a little higher than that.
Well, it immediately, yeah, the first day it turned out to be, you know, it was 35. So I paid 6. Essentially, in principal and interest.
Okay. Do you know, did they separate the principal and interest on that, or are they combined where you're paying on them all at once?
I'm not sure.
Sure. No, that's no problem. No problem. I was just out of curiosity, kind of creates a different situation. A lot of times when they separate the principal and interest, when you want to shave off that interest as you're trying to do right now, it's a lot easier to do than when they don't. So just for your knowledge there.
I mean, we're working with we've already got to the point where we're working with a sum of 29, you know.
Sure.
And so they don't have all that interest hanging out there. And so we've worked them into a pretty good spot, and so now they're negotiating. I've got a guy in your area that that's negotiating with them.
Okay. Do you know who? What is the name of that company
that I bought from?
Yeah.
QuickBridge.
Oh, QuickBridge. Okay. Okay, I'm pretty familiar with the way they do it.
Yeah, everybody knows them, and you know, it's just you know they, I had some success negotiating with them, but you know, I'm looking forward to negotiate it, and you know, then hopefully with success toward your end, just pay them off and be done with them.
Yeah, and actually, that probably is the most likely scenario. If we are able to get something in place for you, which I do think we will be, based on your sales and what you're looking for and that current balance on the loan, the most likely scenario would be we would get you I kind of call it a payoff loan. So it would pay off the total balance with your existing loan and then give you additional capital on top of that. Now that at that point, then our, you know, 75 compared to 50,000 would kind of come into play here, because that total current balance that you have would, you know, it would play into the amount that is available to you. So let's say we get you approved for 80,000, that 29,000 of that would go to paying off that current loan, and then you would net probably close to about 50,000 on that. Now,
that'd be great.
That is what I see as our best scenario, the number one, you know, option that we're going to shoot for. Now, the other option would be to get you a second position loan that wouldn't pay off that first one. But quite honestly, when you start, it's called stacking. When you start taking another loan on top of an existing loan, they just get more expensive that way.
I'd certainly rather take less than and do that stacking.
Sure, yeah. Okay, so we have a pretty good idea, or at least I do on my end, of kind of how we want to go about attacking this. So, you know, the next step is going to be quite simply to get you qualified, to get you approved. And in order to do that, I need a few things that's probably similar to what you went through with QuickBridge, but the paperwork that I need, it's a one-page application. We take a look at the six most recent months of the business bank statements, and then the most recent tax return that you have. So do you have 2015 finished already?
Yeah. I have 2015. I have the income statement. Of course, you know, the taxes, it worked out really well. We show zero, or maybe $10,000 of income. So you know, you have to look at Schedule C and show what I use there. But I'll send the income statement at the same time for 2015. Then I can send a current income statement and so forth. If I do 6 months of bank statements, you're going to see three pretty good months, and then you're going to see the last 3 months where I've been suffering with this cash flow problem. It's just not pretty.
I see. Okay, so in that case, if you,
I can send you a year.
Yes, and that's what I recommend. If you go through a little period where there's a little stumble or something like that, send the full thing so we can get a whole picture instead of just kind of, you know, a snapshot. So it'll be more reflective of what you did in the year.
Yeah, well, but you have to remember, when you look at the bank statements, I was actually making some pretty good sales during those periods. But the POs were going directly to this software vendor in Paris. And so I'm not showing that cash flow as I was.
Sure.
And then they weren't paying their invoices and so on. So I'll show you. So if you look at the 2016 results that I'll show you in the income and so forth, you'll see the sales that I'm making. Now it's a little slower than I expected, but we're on a path to double last year.
And
that doesn't include the cable box.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so yeah, potentially could be a whole lot more. And I definitely will make a note of all of that. I have pretty thorough notes on our entire conversation. So everything is going to be, you know, we don't just look at, you know, one number. We take into account the full story that paints the picture. So we will be able to do that. Oh, you
I've
do
got
it's,
all that
okay.
ready. So.
Well, I'll tell you what I will do right now is I will send you an email. I will attach the application that I need, and it will have that short list of the documents that I need. If you can just go ahead and turn those around right back to me, I can go ahead and submit it to our underwriters today. I have a meeting. I have two meetings every day, one at 10 o'clock, which is coming up soon, and another one at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Are you Central Time?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you can get it over to me by probably 3:30 your time today, I can get you on the docket for our meeting this afternoon and hopefully get you some feedback tomorrow and hopefully go over some hard numbers of what you qualify for.
That'd be great.
It's a pretty quick turnaround.
I've got this stuff organized, and so I can put together an email to you pretty quick.
Okay, well, and you know what? One other thing to simplify this process, if you can send over the first page of your current loan contract with QuickBridge, because that loan is going to be a factor in how much we are able to give you, it'll cut out a step later in the process. So if you can send, I'll put that in the email as well, but if you can send the first page of the contract, we'll be able to pretty much, you know, get you the hard numbers hopefully by tomorrow.
Okay, well, I'll look for that. Okay.
Okay, and if that presents a problem, if you can't find it, go ahead, send me everything else, but just when you do find it, send it over, because it will be part of the process that we'll have to do.
Okay, great. I'll do it.
Okay, well, Stuart, hey, it's been, you know, an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and actually look forward to, you know, making all this possible.
That'd be great. I appreciate the time, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. I will send this over to you right now. You'll have all of my direct contact information. So if you have any questions, you know, don't hesitate. Go ahead, reach out.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Stuart.
Bye-bye.